Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Greetings, Grapple fans. And welcome to the most listened podcast in all of sports and entertainment, the Pro Wrestling Index. And that's about as close as you'll get me being kind to The Miz. That's a ever so slight reference. I am missing my tag team partner this evening. Yeah, unfortunately, Mo Chatra can't be with us this week because, you know, such is life. We do have day jobs here, you know. So unfortunately, Mo can't be with us. But as ever, stepping into the breach, stepping through the curtain, out from the Guy Rilla position, is the one and only Guy Drinkle.
Oh, God. Not this shit again.
Oh, yes.
No singing
I'm
this
getting
time.
All these references in tonight.
No singing this time.
No singing.
Maybe at the end.
Now you say that, but it was, goodness gracious, great balls of fire. So I may feel compelled to try and quite terribly sing that at some point. So yeah,
find a song for Battleground and we'll be cracking.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there a song called
Punjabi Shite?
God, I can't wait till SmackDown next week when they're bringing the Punjabi prison to SmackDown. It's going to be just brilliant. Ooh. Yeah, how the hell are they going to get that down in time to record 205 Live afterwards?
Don't matter, nobody watches anyway.
Well, there you go. Maybe what they could do is just like have all the 205 Live matches inside the Punjabi prison and see if anyone actually notices. well, what with them being cruiserweights, those guys can flippity flop off the top of that thing.
Do a jump.
Jump off the damn thing. It's only 50 feet.
I think that's the best fitting way to end the cruiserweight division. Just have Neville jump from the top of the Punjabi prison.
They all die. And then Roman can reverse her ambulance right over them all.
Oh dear, that's a good segue.
That is a good segue. Anyway, so yes, by the way, yeah, I am your host, Andy Wales. I should say that, in case you didn't already know. Yes, tonight...
Oh, different this week.
Yeah. We are here to discuss Great Balls of Fire, that monumental event this past weekend. But before we do get onto that, Guy, there is a couple of news items that I would like to discuss. We retweeted them out there on the Pro Wrestling Index Twitter feed. And the first one was a real bolt out of the blue, and this really took me by surprise. It was announced on Friday that WWE had released Austin Aries. What the hell's all that about?
I don't know. As you said, it came out of nowhere, really. Obviously, it's not quite release season yet. I'm not sure when it is, but you haven't got the mass releases at this time of the year, so it's basically a firing or a joint decision. But yeah, it was really random, especially that he had the cruiserweight feud of WrestleMania. But I think it's fully justified that for a person who's had his career, whether it's been, I don't know much about his Ring of Honor career, but his time in TNA kind of broke barriers between what they called the cruiserweight division, which was the X division, and the main roster. Obviously, WWE and TNA are like different leagues, different entities, but to be limited in such a way where you've basically got the least inspiring part of the show, and then you're locked to work with like a small group of wrestlers, I can see why I'd be left frustrated. Just as a cruiserweight person, when I imagine when he signed with WWE, he was given assurances of working full time. As you saw on NXT, he was working. I think his big feud was Baron Corbin and stuff like that, and Nakamura. So yeah, I don't think he wants to be limited to basically a sideshow.
Yeah, well, I mean, some rumors have been emerging over the weekend and over the past few days that, yeah, he was certainly less than happy and had, by all accounts, voiced his frustrations quite...
Oh, you can't do that in WWE.
Well, he's, apparently he's not one to hold his tongue. He's quite outspoken, not afraid to speak his mind and share his thoughts. And by all accounts, he was feeling somewhat frustrated by being pigeonholed within the cruiserweight division. And I don't think his character really suited being a babyface. He's certainly more comfortable as a heel. It suits him better. He carries it off much better. And I think had Neville not come on the scene and just took everything by force as arguably the best heel in the company right now, then, you know, he may well have been the guy holding the cruiserweight title as the lead heel for that division, and perhaps been, you know, felt more comfortable. Maybe he, you know, he was more suited to his role in NXT than what he was doing with the cruiserweights, and I dare say he would like to have been given the opportunity to work with other people on the main roster and not being so, you know, limited to his opponents and to what he was doing. So yeah, I guess there's understandable if there's some creative frustrations there, because the other thing is, you know, he's not in the early stage of his career. You know, he's in his late 30s, so, you know, he is in great shape. He's a very good worker. He's got the name value, but he doesn't, he doesn't have another decade left, most likely, in the ring. So he, you know, the time is there to make the most of it. And let's face it, you know, unless you are at, you know, in the top echelon of the WWE, where you're making more money than anybody else in the business, if you're down the lower end of the card, you're not making as much money. And those guys, the big name guys on the independent scene now, they can make an awful lot of money with Japan and all the various bookings. So his name value and some of the good people that are out there and the kind of things that's happening in Japan, I guess he sees it as an opportunity to go out there and get a bit more satisfaction for his creative juices, shall we say.
Yeah, and well, we all know the WWE schedules, like, it's just different gravy compared to everything else. It's grueling, and obviously working both Raw, the house shows, 205 Live, pay-per-views, whatever, he's probably not thinking this isn't worth my time and the money's not worth me doing that when I can just do the independent circuit, either go to Japan, go back to Ring of Honor, I don't know what TNA or whatever the hell it's called now.
Yeah, well, it's now known as Global Force Wrestling, yeah, isn't it? I mean, yeah, it's got new owners in Anthem, they own it, they've taken over the company, and obviously they've gone for the name change now, a complete and utter change. Because that brand was dead, a bit of an albatross, yeah. So they're heading in a new direction. By all accounts, that's improving. So who knows? But I'm glad, as someone who saw him, you know, probably 10 years ago when he first came into TNA and seen a few bits and pieces of his other work, you know, I've seen what he's capable of, and he is very, very good. So I'm glad I've seen him work in the WWE, and certainly with NXT, because that's, you know, it's quite a unique slot, the NXT, and it's nice to see some of these guys get to work there and enjoy that.
It's just because, a shame that, well, he had his couple feuds with NXT, then he got his injury.
Yeah.
Then he was forced onto the failing experiment that is the Cruiserweight. But, I mean, out of it, I'd probably say he was one of the better ones with Jack. I'd probably put him in the same category as Jack Gallagher, where he was actually working, whereas I think Neville's in a league of his own, and then you've got a couple that are worked, and then the rest of it's just like, oh, dearie me.
Yeah. That's it. At least we've seen him, and good luck to him for the future. Yeah. Another news item that, again, came out over the weekend was a WWE show, effectively a house show, but, you know, slightly more than your regular house show, because it was at Madison Square Garden. AJ Styles beating Kevin Owens for the US title. So them doing a title switch, not on TV. Now, it took people by surprise. Got a huge pop from the crowd there, not just because it's AJ Styles and he's, you know, hugely popular, but that surprise element to it. There were some rumors at the time that there was an injury to Owens, and this is why they've done the switch. But we haven't seen Kevin Owens working since and working on SmackDown. It certainly didn't look like he was carrying any injuries or nothing noticeable anyway. And I do wonder whether this was just one of them things that they've done, like they did with the NXT title when they switched that off TV, as, you know, just a way to kind of boost that house show audience. You know, you know, give people that feeling that you never know, it might just happen. There might be a title switch. So try and, you know, boost the attendances there. So it was quite a surprise, really.
Yeah, I mean, when stuff doesn't happen on TV, I think everyone would classify that as a surprise. I think it was either he had a niggling injury where it could have gone either way, so they took no chances, or, as you said, they just kind of want to keep the feud a bit interesting, but they don't want, like, to write it over numerous pay-per-views. So I thought, Madison Square Garden, iconic venue, make the house shows surprising, as you said. So I think it could go either way. I mean, who knows what condition Kevin Owens is in. We know the relationship with WWE and injuries. I mean, I think you wrestle till you basically can't, so it may have just been protecting your hand there. But I think it'll work. I think obviously we know AJ can carry bigger titles than the US title, and they're seemingly going to bring back the we're going on to SmackDown, but this look like they're going to bring back the Open Challenge. So maybe they thought the mid-card was going to go a bit stale, so they thought they'd change it up. But I think people still want to see the feud between AJ and Owens. Maybe they just thought AJ was better holding the title and Owens was better at chasing at this moment in time.
So it certainly adds another dimension to it.
Yeah.
And AJ Styles has already shown, you know, how fantastic it is carrying the title within WWE, and
so,
you know,
Owens,
it's
to be fair. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, both guys, and kind of noticeable as well that really, I mean, AJ Styles was saying you're going to make this the you know title, the most important title, and
all they have to do is show up.
Yeah, right now the US title is bigger than the WWE title on their television program. So there's that one. So anyway, there's our couple of news items out of the way. We'll see how things pan out with both of them, really, because I'm guessing more details will probably emerge on Austin Aries, and perhaps if there is an injury to Owens, that they're, you know, perhaps some surgery or something like that, that they're now kind of they're holding off maybe till after Battleground or something. Who knows? Maybe time will tell anyway, but that'll all come out in the wash. So time for us to move on to goodness gracious Great Balls of Fire. And no, I won't sing it. Pre-show, just the one match. Neville defeating Kira Tozawa. As we would expect, a slightly ropey finish. Ha ha! Excuse the pun. Bit of a...
Dear me. TV.
I had an Alan Partridge moment there. yeah, that, I mean, that's just to set up the feud continuing. It just, for me, it's a waste Neville being on a pre-show, but hey ho. Well, for me, the pre-show is just a nothing anyway.
Yeah, it's basically you're watching it because there's nothing else on at midnight. You've literally got reruns of Family Guy and American Dad or the pre-show.
Family Guy and American Dad. Thank you very much. So on with the main card. Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins. My expectations were not high for this. Now, I've got to say, normally, you know, first match of the night, you know, the curtain jerker, usually it's something, you know, a good match that you want to put on. Everyone's excited. The crowd are up. They weren't for this. And I think it's kind of, it's just telling of how little people care about Bray Wyatt and how Seth Rollins has kind of lost some luster as well. Mm. And for me, this was compounded by Bray Wyatt defeating Seth Rollins, because it not only, it does hurt Seth Rollins, because I don't think they did enough of on the finish to really protect Seth, but that's my personal opinion.
I can't even remember the finish.
Was a thumb to the eye.
Yes.
Now, Seth Rollins, what he did do, I've never seen anyone take the Sister Abigail the way he took it. He really sold it. Big style. It was like The Rock taking the stunner. You know, nobody sold the stunner like The Rock.
Like you've just killed someone.
Yeah. my biggest thing coming out is that Rollins losing to this, which is a big surprise, obviously, is that this will continue. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, Bray winning, obviously, I think Bray's kind of, as we keep saying, I mean, I like Bray. I was happy that he got the WWE title, and they just kind of killed him off, or that character off, once and for all. With that, and then they've kind of moved him over to Raw, and it's just kind of not really done anything. But yeah, Bray winning doesn't help Bray, and it doesn't help Seth, obviously.
See, for me, it doesn't help Seth, because I know it's not, they're not building Bray for anything. You know, it's not a means to an end that Bray Wyatt, you know, has been built up for something huge.
Yeah.
This is just a matter of keeping this feud going.
It's
Bray
like
Wyatt is so damaged. You know, he's seen as damaged goods by fans, that the perception is like, oh my God, Seth Rollins has just lost to him, but everybody beats him.
It's not like the match was bad either. Like, it was an enjoyable match, but as you said, I'd probably say like 2.5 star, 3.5, 3 star, like middle of the road, enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, it's just weird. It's just weird that, well, it's weird seeing Bray Wyatt win a match, let's be honest. But yeah, if the feud continues, like, Bray isn't built as a monster heel. Like, he's not got heat from the crowd. It's just very bland, meh. So it's not going to help Rollins get over. Rollins isn't crazily over, so it's not going to help Bray get heat on him from the crowd. It's kind of, unless, like, something from the Attitude Era happens, as we'll go on to later in the show, in this feud, it's going to just be like a very forgettable feud, which I imagine it will be. But I think both characters in here need big changes. I mean, Seth Rollins coming off what he did at WrestleMania, I don't know how they've kind of killed his momentum, but they have, and they need to change it. And as I said, Bray's been in a bloody circle of awfulness for probably a year and a half, 2 years, and couple good moments.
Well, Seth Rollins, I mean, when he came back from the injury, he was hot then. That was the time to turn him babyface, because the crowd were hot for him. They were behind him. And instead, they persisted with him as a heel for a couple of months, and it wasn't really working because the crowd were wanting to cheer him. Mm. But he went into, you know, it was kind of drifted along a nothingness that he just lost momentum. And ever since, it's just been, I don't know, he's just missing something, and now he's turned into this suck-up babyface, and it's, you know, begging for applause and begging for sympathy, and it's just, it doesn't fit him. So, you know, I think both guys need a change of direction, not necessarily turning, but just a change of direction, and they both need to move on to someone else.
Yeah.
Really, really do.
Yeah.
Anyway, next one up was Big Cass and Enzo Amore. And Enzo's pre-match promo was longer than the match itself. And I must admit, I think it was about 5 minutes in on his promo, I was thinking, God, I can't wait for Big Cass to come out and put a boot in his face just to shut him up. And you know what I mean? I'm thinking, God, no wonder he turned on me. He's getting on my nerves now. It just, it was too long. That promo was just too damn long.
What
you know, the time for talking is supposed to be over. This is, you know, this is fight night, not talking night.
Yeah, I mean, what did it, was it Frank Sinatra he started speaking? Or was that before?
Yeah, it was yeah. Frank Sinatra, yeah. Yeah, the guy from New York talking about the star of New York, Frank Sinatra, yeah. or the star of Las Vegas as well, Frank Sinatra, in Texas. Yeah. It didn't really get over too well, with, you know. It didn't do much, but
I was sat watching. I was like, "This should have been two lines at most, and it should have had Cass coming out really pissed off and literally just destroyed him." And
yeah.
Maybe for story reasons, obviously, just make it a bit longer where he's more punishing than just ending the match. And I think they kind of did that. But yeah, I mean, you've gone from Bray Wyatt and Seth Rollins to the really out of place, cringy promo, which was well delivered, but yeah, time and place, it didn't really work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a 30 seconds, maybe 1 minute promo, you know, all pumped up. And then, yeah, we basically have a glorified squash match where he has a bit of a comeback in there, you know, so the crowd can get behind him. But you just really get over the fact that, you know, Cass is now this heel and who's just a monster and is going to punish and wear down, you know, the guy who was his best friend for all them years. So,
yeah.
Was that the
arena they debuted on? They should have took that angle a lot more rather than Frank Sinatra. It was really weird. But yeah, I hope that's the end of it. And well,
yeah, I suspect
moving on to bigger things, isn't
he? Yeah, I suspect they'll probably do a little bit more on TV for a few weeks.
Accidental pun with a Big Show, though.
well, maybe that's the way they move.
Yeah,
as transitioning him across and getting him onto moving on to other things, so who knows anyway.
At this moment, I don't really care about either of them.
See, well, Cass has got potential, you know, the big guy. He can talk. He's okay in the ring. He can, you know, there's work to be done there, but there's potential, definitely potential.
Yeah. Raw talking was good.
Yeah, just have to see what they do. But now the tag team titles next. This 30-man Iron Man match, I was looking forward to this. Now, we were discussing this last week, myself and Moore, and Moore said, as long as they go for something like, you know, an early pinfall to do something a bit different, you know, so we don't go sort of 20 minutes before we get anything and it all goes a bit dead. And they did just that. I liked it. You know, we got an early pinfall and they went two up and it was... For me, it was a good story. I liked the way that they told it, and it was an enjoyable match. I quite liked it, and it really sort of peaked in them last, probably 8 minutes, of, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, where it, you know, really sort of twists and turns. I did enjoy it, and I thought the finish was just pure perfection. You know, for the pinfall to begin with like 1 second left on the clock, that was absolute perfection. And kudos to everyone involved for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think 30 minutes is a bit long nowadays. I don't think many people are used to seeing 30-minute matches in the middle of the card matches. But yeah, I think it worked. It may have drawn out a little bit. Maybe it could have been 25 minutes, but that's a really weird number to have an Iron Man match for. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I think the perfect start and the perfect end, as you said, the basically instant pinfall for, I can't remember who did the pinning, but I think it was Cesaro. And then obviously the finish where it was literally a second away from drawing or winning. So yeah, it was an enjoyable match. I mean, when you've got Cesaro and Sheamus and the Hardy Boys, it's never going to be a bad match. I mean, Cesaro is one of the best workers in the bloody company. Hardys are the most experienced tag team in the company who've had many matches. I mean, they're not particularly good wrestlers, but they can put on fantastic matches. Sheamus, very solid at everything. It was never going to be bad. And I think the storytelling in the match really worked. I think, obviously, we'll come on to what happened on Raw, but I think it's helped build the Hardys, and it'll be interesting to see where Sheamus and Cesaro go on from this. Obviously, Sheamus is off soon.
Yeah, he's doing the movie, isn't he? He's filming, but I wonder whether they'll fit around this, you know, and make him available one day a week to do TV.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's a possibility. But I mean, we'll see. But I'm sure that's a possibility.
Yeah. So I think this tag team has a lot of legs left in it. I mean, they obviously had the feud with New Day, which was very good, and I think they've just come on strength from strength, and especially them turning heel. I think it's kind of just worked. I think everything they've done as a tag team's worked. So I don't want to see the end of it. And I think them.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree. I like them together. I think they've really come along. You know, you can see that they're trying to make it work themselves. They've got natural chemistry.
Mm.
And they just work well in the ring. And it's just good to see two hard-hitting, you know, really solid, snug workers like that who work that sort of physical style. And it's quite refreshing. It's quite, you know, almost like a shoot style, how physical they are at times.
Very European, isn't it?
Yeah, with influences from Japan. But I quite enjoy Iron Man matches when they're well done. Yeah. And I thought this was quite well put together. It's bound to have a bit of a flat area in it, you know, because of the time. But I think it was well worked. It was well put together, beautifully choreographed at the end. And like you say, you know, just kudos to everyone involved for the way that they pulled it off at the end. It was just so, so good. And that was... You know, working on the fly slightly with that massive cut above Matt Hardy's eye, but I like the fact that they kept the titles as well. I do like that. I predicted they'd probably lose them just because we thought everybody else would keep their titles, so I thought they would go for a title switch somewhere on there. But no, it's good to see them keep it. And as you hinted, on Raw. It's the Hardys that are giving us the hints, and they are big hints that we could be seeing changes of character. You know, the straight away Jeff Hardy, you know, we will not become obsolete. And Matt Hardy doing his, you know, extravagant words and pronunciations. So, we could be seeing the old broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero characters here pretty soon.
I think it's what everyone's been waiting for. I mean, I think everyone's loved having the Hardys back. I think it's worked a lot better than, for example, the Dudleys coming back. Because obviously they got the huge stage of WrestleMania and they've had the titles and stuff, so it's worked quite well. But when the rumours started that they were coming back, everyone was like, broken Matt Hardy's going to be on a huge stage. This is going to be amazing. And... once the dust settled from their amazing return, it's like, when are they going to go broken? And I hope these teases are basically concrete stuff, that it's going to happen soon. But as we saw on Raw, that it looks like they're going to be working with a revival. So that has scope to be, one, a great feud and matches, and two, a perfect opportunity to, one, to get the revival over, because obviously they've had a bit of a horrible patch with the injury, and then obviously that end zone cast stuff where it just kind of came really cold from what was
the
beginning.
That was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, so having broken Hardy's feud with what I'd say is the best tag team in the business, it can't go wrong, and hopefully it gets both of them over and doesn't damage either character.
Or either tag team. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a case of that the revival get the upper hand on this feud, and that's what sets up the whole change of gimmick. So the actual execution and how it goes week by week, I guess that's a bit I'm looking forward to. You know, the old style storytelling. So from one set of titles to another, the Raw Women's Championship. Now, Sasha Banks, Alexa Bliss, a much better match than I expected. I must admit, you know, Alexa's really coming along now, and these two worked really well together. The only thing was the finish was a bit, and I've got to say, Sasha Banks jumping off the announce desk and landing with both knees onto the ground. Oh Jesus, she can't do that. She's got to stop doing that. Otherwise, she'll be having surgery next year.
I mean, if not sooner. I winced like crazy at that bit. It's like you're like a foot away from like a bar that's sticking out. Yeah, I'd break your leg. It was just very bad. I mean, do a crossbody. Don't do your bloody double knees thing. I mean, that's literally centimeters away from ending a year of your career. I kind of agree. The match was good, but the ending was a bit shit. I think most people would know it would either end in a Sasha clean win or an Alexa cheap heel victory, and it wasn't even heelish. It was just a bit shit. I think it worked quite well. Obviously, you saw the spot where Alexa pretended to have her arm broken. I think we've seen that before on SmackDown with Becky Lynch. I can't remember.
Yes, we have seen it before, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it is, I squirmed the first time I saw it, and I squirmed again when I saw it. And
I mean,
it still makes me go bleh.
It's impressively repulsive. But yeah, I think it works, and obviously there's still scope for this feud, and it's getting into SummerSlam season, so I think Bayley will probably be coming into it. But yeah, I think Alexa Bliss has shown that she can hang with the big women of the division.
Yeah, this is for me. This is a way to keep this feud going, and who knows? Maybe it's you know all part of gearing towards SummerSlam and it being, you know, a triple threat or a fatal four way. So we'll see. But yeah, I thought they had a good match. And but as expected, obviously the title did not change hands, as was the case with our next match, the Intercontinental title. The Miz successfully retaining the title against Dean Ambrose, obviously with the help of Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas on the outside. This is a match, personally, I think should have been the break-in between the ambulance match and the main event, because I didn't care too much for it. The crowd didn't seem to care too much for it.
I forgot it happened.
Yeah, and let's be honest, look, you know, we've seen The Miz and Dean Ambrose have matches for about 6 months now, you know, on TV constantly. People just don't really care. So this would have been the perfect breaker in between, you know, your big impact. And obviously we'll talk about what was coming after that match and then your main event. So, hey ho, what did you make of it?
I can't remember what happened. I kind of remember the end where it was Maryse and what are they called? Miz Taraj. Yeah, that's the word. That's the awful word. Yeah, I mean, Dean Ambrose, boring. Miz, I think he's good at building a feud because he's easy to hate, but his matches, unless they're telling a really good story, as we've seen with Dolph Ziggler, they're not really that great, and they're always going to have some cheap tactics in it, which kind of get a bit repetitive. But yeah, I think Dean Ambrose needs Bray Wyatt levels of character surgery. The Miz, I think he can keep doing what he's doing, but he needs a better character to bounce off of. And I can't even judge the match as a spectacle because I can't remember what happened in it, which kind of speaks volumes that it must have been a bit shit.
It certainly wasn't a classic. I don't think these two have had one classic match. They might have had one that I thought was quite good, but yeah, look, I've always said this with The Miz. For me, he's a functional worker. He's okay. Yeah. He's not a bad worker. He's okay. Yeah. He's not a great worker. He doesn't have great matches unless he's got someone in there who's of such a high caliber they can really put something together. So I think he's a decent worker. He's just very functional. But what he's got is a character. He's got a good character, a good heel character, and that works with Maurice, and he delivers a promo.
Mm.
So give him a scripted promo, and he really delivers it. Now, some people struggle with these scripted promos. His delivery is excellent. That's what he does. And in the mid-card, you know, as the heel with the mid-card championship belt for all the baby faces to build up towards and to chase, that's, you know, that is the optimum place for him. And it works well. But I agree, he definitely needs somebody else to work with now, because they've just done this feud for far, far too long now. They really, really have. It feels like it's been going on for about, I don't know, 15 years.
It feels like it's literally just replaced Dolph Ziggler with Dean Ambrose, and it's the exact same feud, but they haven't done it as well as they did on SmackDown. but yeah, it's kind of just copied in someone who's talented to a certain degree, can sell pretty well, but it's probably not as good or not as interesting as Dolph Ziggler was on SmackDown when they had the really good feud. But yeah, it's just gone from a shit feud, a really over saturated feud, to one that it's gone on too long. It's kind of just broken now. It's just nobody cares, and it's gonna start. So it's gonna start affecting the Miz's effect as a heel character soon. I think you need him as a solid mid carder heel, because I think you can always rely on him to go into somewhere and be the asshole in a feud.
Yeah.
But Ambrose, yeah, he needs to. He needs a character surgery, and what they did on Raw didn't help.
Yeah, I mean, Ambrose needs a character surgery, but both guys need to move on from this. They really do.
Yes.
They need to move them on and start something fresh. And that was a thing with this. Now, overall, the event, I kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was quite a good event. A lot of it is a problem is we see it week in, week out on TV.
Yeah.
And it's so that's what maybe why, you know, these events don't feel special like they used to. But what it kind of benefited from was, and some of it did feel a bit fresh. And, you know, the main event was definitely fresh.
Mm.
And Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss, that still feels kind of fresh, you know. And that's, you know, because you keep people apart on, you know, obviously they're going to be together talking, building up promos, but not this endlessly, either fighting each other or in tag matches against each other week in, week out, to the point where by the time they have their feud, you know, that's what traditionally would be their blow-off. We've already seen it so many times that we're just not interested. We, you know, we've lost that engagement, and I think they kind of need to get back to a bit of that. They really need to, you know, go back to basics at some point. You know, what worked in the past and continues to work, and just rediscover some of them things. But anyway, my rant over. Ambulance match then. Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns. I wasn't expecting this to be a technical classic or anything like that, but I was kind of looking forward to it. And Roman Reigns. Braun Strowman's become like my guilty pleasure now. I do enjoy him. I just find him kind of funny and entertaining.
He's replacing Kane in my heart. I love the bloke. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting a masterclass of wrestling with her. But my main worry is obviously they've had this feud going before WrestleMania, and they've had good matches before. And it's just kind of interesting that the ambulance match was picked, because I think we've seen in the past that ambulance matches are really, really predictable. We've seen, like, John Cena and Ryback, I think. Where you could see that the ambulance has a fake roof and stuff like that. So yeah, it wasn't really an inspiring stipulation. But yeah, it really worked. It really worked. And if you look, they've had this feud around ambulances. Obviously, Braun getting injured, Braun flipping a bloody ambulance over. It's kind of been there or thereabouts all the time, but I think the finish was great. The match itself was actually quite entertaining. There were some good spots. There was some pretty much just a brutal brawl throughout the whole of it. I think the ending was quite funny. But yeah, I think the main thing coming out of this match is the post-match, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, it was quite sort of brutal, and yeah, they were going at each other. And this is the thing, like you said, this has been going on for a while, but there's something about it. And I think it's the way that the character of Braun Strowman has kind of really engaged with the audience, that this has still been enjoyable. And the fact that these two haven't been fighting every week, you know, that the injuries and the way that they've sold that, you know, taking, obviously there was a genuine injury there to Strowman. He was off for some time. Yeah, he had that gap. Yeah. And, you know, they had the gaps between where, you know, they were off screen or they were away from each other to come back, that it still has a bit of a freshness about it. But yeah, the ambulance side of it is like, oh my God, you know, I've always remembered them being terrible matches. But this was kind of fun, but it's just a little bit, the finish was a bit like out of nowhere, like, oh, is that it? You know, a little bit disappointing.
then it began.
Yeah, not really kind of in keeping with how the match had gone. It was kind of a little bit of an anticlimax, the actual finish. But yeah, I guess the finish was just the prelude to what was the real finish.
To the Attitude Era.
Well, yeah, it was certainly spectacular. And yeah, it was Attitude Era, and even early 2000s when they did that stuff with NWO and whatnot. Yeah, you know, WWE has a long history of blowing things up and smashing
people.
Vehicles. And, yeah, yeah.
Vince McMahon's probably died about 8 times.
But it was kind of fun. And I've got to ask the question, because I know in the eyes of the crowd, Roman Reigns is a heel. And in the eyes of the crowd, Braun Strowman is a bona fide babyface. He's one of the biggest babyfaces on the card. But I suspect to Vince McMahon, Braun Strowman's still a monster heel, and he's persisting to try and convince us that we should be cheering for Roman Reigns despite the best efforts of the crowd. But I did wonder whether this was not the actual turn of Roman Reigns, but another small step in that direction, because just kind of the way he's been on social media in recent weeks, I just wonder if these are all very small and slow, methodical steps towards a turn. But do you think this was an out and out babyface turn for Braun Strowman? Because the way he came out of that ambulance, refused help, you know, everyone was concerned about him and the crowd reacted so much to him, it's got to be impossible for him to be anything else but.
I'm not sure if it's worked well. I don't know if it, I think it would work if they went with it, but I don't think it will work the way we want for Roman. I think they're going to try with Roman what people have been asking for. Obviously, they want to keep him face, but I think they're going to try and make him this no-shit-taken face, where he's just a bit stone-cold, but obviously PG stone-cold, not as fun stone-cold, but basically no-shit-given kind of thing. But yeah, with Braun, I mean, he gets huge. I know it's because he's feuding with someone who's been forced down people's throat, and that's why he got a reaction initially. But yeah, I mean, people are cheering for him when he just comes on stage, because I think his entrance music helps, because he just comes on and it's just him shouting and it's kind of impactful and hits you. But yeah, I think he's over with the crowd, and whether that's just because you know something's about to go wrong, something's about to happen.
Yeah, and part of it is, you know, there's no denying, part of it is purely down to the fact that he's shouting at Roman Reigns and chucking him around the ring like a rag doll, and he's the guy who's beating up the one that the crowd are booing.
He can do that to anyone, so it's going to work unless he's fighting Lesnar anytime soon, which may be a possibility. But he could literally do that to anyone in the roster.
Well, let's move on to Lesnar then. Lesnar and Samoa Joe. I was really looking forward to this match because, as I said to Mo last week, you know, this was a match that I've been wanting to see for quite some time. You know, for years. Samoa Joe was one of those, you know, fantasy opponents for me for Brock Lesnar. Just the right sort of style, physique, charisma, everything. It was just suited to being a credible opponent. And not only that, I think they could really put on something in the ring. And I was looking forward to it. I half expected it to be a one and done. And I obviously didn't expect the title to change hands. But once they got going, I'm thinking, oh, I really want to see this again. And I was disappointed that it only went 6.5 minutes because it was fun. And I just loved the way it got started. You know, the simple fact that Joe wasn't waiting for the announcements. Bang, we're into it. And he put Brock Lesnar in jeopardy in the eyes of the crowd. And it's almost in a way that they were thinking, you could see their eyes thinking, wow, are we going to have another one of these moments that we had with Goldberg?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the Brock Lesnar character is that you've only seen him vulnerable probably twice, and that's the last feud and this feud. Obviously, you had Goldberg where he lost the first few moments with Royal Rumble and all that. And then this one, Joe's been chalking him out every other week. And obviously, I think Heyman's being a big part of this vulnerability, where he's kind of changed his tune with Joe, where it's like, oh, you're nobody, and then just, yes, can you stop, like, trying to murder me, please? But I think it's just been perfect, and I think, obviously, it'd be nice to see Brock go a bit longer than 6.5 minutes, but it did feel longer than 6.5 minutes, which I think it's credit to them both. But it would be nice to see this feud go on again because the storytelling's there. Heyman's there with Joe. They've clearly got a chemistry that just works. But, I mean, we saw on Raw that when Brock talks, it kind of adds another level to it where, you know, shit's real. And I loved it when Brock kind of spoke up and it was him and Joe. There seems to be a respect there because I think Mo made the point last week when I was editing the pod of here, I have to listen through it, that Brock's a bit old school, that he'll put over people who he thinks are worthy, and that speaks volumes about Joe, that he's willing to show a vulnerable side to an everyday worker, not a part-timer like Goldberg or Undertaker or Triple H. This is just some Owen bloke who's paved his way in the independent circuit and really out of shape and just chokes people out, but he's an awesome wrestler. I think that speaks volumes of how Heyman and Brock and people behind the scenes look at Joe, that he is a character that is very much there. And I think the link with Triple H, I hope it is Triple H pushing him, because he's not a typical Vince character, is he? Put it that way.
No, he's definitely not. I think what Joe has is a real element of legitimacy about him. You know, with the striking, with the striking, with the submissions, you know, he's not all about the physique. He's never been about that, but he's always been such a great mover in the ring, you know, very agile. But the striking, everything, the selling, the way he talks, the way he puts things over. Yeah, he has that legitimacy about him. And I think that's probably what attracts Brock Lesnar, you know, because that's what he is about, is legitimacy. So if you've got that sense of legitimacy between two athletes, you know, and this is and presented as a fight, you know, I think that really appeals to I would imagine that really appeals to Brock Lesnar, and I do think there's more to it. I mean, I think the way that I was enjoying the match, and it's a shame that it ended as quickly as it did and kind of out the blue in the way that it did. But yeah, as you mentioned, you know, on Raw it looks like we are going to see more of it, because you know, it's Roman Reigns has put himself there, and I like the fact that Lesnar stepped in, you know, and said what he said, and Joe's there, you know, I like Jaws just plain and simple. You look at me when I'm talking to you, you know, and that is that, that just, you know, he said so much with so little there, and it was just beautiful. And so you've got the three of them, and it looks like that's not going to go anywhere time soon. And then obviously the next week we're supposed to have Joe versus Roman Reigns in, you know, battle for the number one contendership. Obviously the suspicion would be that Braun Strowman will show up and intervene, and we'll end up with perhaps having a four-way at SummerSlam, which I think could work really well, and a way of, you know, seeing all four working together again, but it being fresh and it being new. And there's that element in there as well that for the crowd is, it's very, very plausible that the title could change hands and Brock Lesnar is still protected because he doesn't have to take the pinfall. So I think this has got real potential to move on and be a great main event at SummerSlam.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the worst thing they could do is have Roman just win, beat Samoa Joe clean, kill Joe, then go on, face Lesnar 1v1. We've seen that. It was alright. I don't want to really see it again in a simple 1v1. But yeah, the four-way, it could work wonders. I mean, there's boundless limits what you could do in the match. The amount of spots you can have in the match. You've got, well, Joe versus Reigns is going to be good. Joe versus Strowman is mouth-watering stuff. Strowman versus Brock is, I think, it's a sight that many people want to see just because it'll just be intriguing more than anything. But if you have them three, you've got enough there to build the feud without Lesnar till the last few weeks. Then you can bring Heyman in and all that. He can sprinkle his magic dust to make everything seem awesome.
And Vince can just print the money.
Yes.
I mean, it's simple as that.
a fatal four-way of them just prints money. It works. Yeah. It works for Raw. It works for SummerSlam. You can build the feud enough with those three week in, week out.
I think that's a really good point, actually, in that what you mentioned there is you don't need Lesnar on TV to help build this. With the other three, there's your vehicle to get you through TV until what is it, the late August. So another 5 weeks down the road, you only need Lesnar to turn up a couple of times, and there's enough going on between them three that, they'll see you through. So, yeah, absolutely. And you get Paul Heyman to turn up one of them weeks as in addition. Yeah, it's absolutely made. And if that's the way that they do go, and obviously there's nothing's confirmed or anything like that, but if that's the way that they do actually go, and I hope they do, I'll certainly be looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best thing to do here is avoid Roman being forced down our throats more, because you can't just leave Strowman and Joe hanging. I mean, there's probably not a sustainable feud there, unless you're going to continue. I don't know. I think what makes sense is the fatal four way, but it has to happen. It has to happen now that we've said it. But yeah, I think if Roman's involved, Strowman has to be involved, and you can't leave Joe out because Joe is now a main event player. He's moved on from his very weird, horrible feud with Seth Rollins, where it was very meh. It wasn't great, and now he's kind of shown what we'd love to see in NXT and previously in TNA, where he was just a scary dude. And
yeah,
I think he's been the biggest beneficiary of most recent things. And I mean, I think people had a bit of doubt when he won the number one contendership, but I mean, has he delivered? I mean, he's now, absolutely. I think he's now people's main heel in the company.
Yeah, not only that, but I think just the pure dynamics of it in the match, you know, the triple threat can be a bit sort of stop and start, you know, because somebody's always got to be, you know, laid on the side, or there's got to be 2v1. But a fatal four-way means that there can always be two guys working together. So it's pure dynamics. It's and the mechanics of it. It'd be easier to pull off. So yeah, let's hope it happens. Guy, just to sum it up, then, Great Balls of Fire for you. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle.
Massive thumbs up for me. I think there was only the one bad spot in the Intercontinental title match. I mean, I kind of enjoyed Bray versus Seth, but I think that was more middle. But yeah, I think everything else apart from them two matches was very good. I mean, the last two matches, or the two main events, were spectacular. They were, yeah. I think they were perfect.
Yeah, other than the name of the pay-per-view, then, yeah, I enjoyed it.
If that's going to be the best pay-per-view of every year, I mean, it kind of adds to it that it's got the shittest name in history.
Yeah, it was. I quite enjoyed it. So, the same for me. Thumbs up for me as well. But we're about out of time here. Next week, we will be... previewing Battleground, which is going to be... Oh, an exciting night.
Send in your favourite Punjabi prison moments, lads.
Try not to tweet them all at once, though, because it might melt the internet.
It might break Twitter.
But before we disappear off, Guy, do you want to let everyone know where they can catch you?
Yeah, at Guy Drinkle, it'll be sent with the pod, but Guy Drink EL, that's how you spell it. But yeah, I just tend to chat football shit and video game stuff. Yeah, if you want to follow me, check me out.
And if you want to keep in touch with this show on Twitter, you can, of course, do so at PW_index over on Twitter. We did put the polls out before the weekend, and fairly predictable results. And most of you were absolutely spot on, so congratulations. But that wraps things up for this week's edition of the Pro Wrestling Index here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. Like I said, we will be back next week to preview Battleground. Ooh, won't that be exciting? I'm sure we'll have some other interesting stuff to talk about, though. And as Guy said, your favourite Punjabi prison match moments, we'll discuss them all. But as always, I want to thank my co-host for the evening, which tonight was, of course, the one and only Guy Drinkle. We want to thank you, the listeners, for hitting that download button and listening in every week as you do. We really do appreciate it. But from me, Andy Wales, it's bye-bye now.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.